deal with every single day of our lives. It's an important question for those of us who are married. It's a very important question for those of us who have not yet been zochet to find their zivug. And that is the notion of the role of basheres. And the concept of basheres, that certain things are predetermined, predestined, fixed in granite, has been used in many, many ways, some of which are positive, some of which are negative, some of which result from fundamental misunderstandings. The concept that the person that I marry is predetermined by Hashem before I'm even born is, of course, the well-known Gemara in the Masechta Sota that says, Arba'im Yayim Kayim Yetziras Havlat, 40 days before the child is conceived, or actually, the Yetziras Havlat is the 40th day. So it means at the moment of conception, people often mistranslate that. Because in Halacha, the term Yetziras Havlat is when the embryo is 40 days old. So Arba'im Yayim Kayim Yetziras Havlat is the moment of conception. Again, most people mistranslate that. But be it as it may, at the moment of conception, a bas kol, a voice in heaven, announces, bas pleni lepleni, the daughter of so-and-so is to be married to so-and-so. Right? This is the makor of the concept of basheres. There is one person in the world that is my soulmate, that is the right person for me, and basheret means, people say, I'm going to get him, whatever happens. Well, this concept of basheret is often misused, because some people use it as a license to do nothing at all. Some people say, hey, my basheret, why do I have to work? Why do I have to present myself properly? Why do I have to learn how to be a mensch, or a dignified woman? I will get who I'm supposed to get, no matter what happens. So some use the concept of basheret as a license to do nothing or behave irresponsibly. Conversely, some use the concept of basheret to obsess whether the person they're going after is the one, is the perfect one, and as a result, they get so paralyzed that they can never make a decision. Yes, he or she is nice. Yes, he or she is good. Yes, he or she has the same values. But is it my Hashem? How can I do it? Right? So we kind of have two extremes, but it culminates in the same thing. You don't get married. In other words, we have the idea that says, I don't have to do anything. And then we have the person who is so paralyzed with the notion of, is this the right one, that they don't move forward. Again, it's very important to note that bachelorhood, particularly for a man, is not a valid halachic option. It's not a valid halachic lifestyle. In fact, pre-Yitzchak, one of the great poskim, he's a Rashi as well, later known as a Baal Musar, who is also a great poskim, rules an amazing thing, that the chi of getting married for a man is so great that if the only available woman who wants to marry him, the woman cannot have children, so he's not going to fulfill Purur Vu. And he's hoping, if he keeps on looking, he'll find a woman that he can have children with. He says, that's only a suffix. You have a vadechi if you get married. You're not sure you'll find a woman or children that can have children that'll want to marry you. He says, you're mechuyev to marry right now the woman who cannot give a children. So that's actually a controversial pshat, but this is a pshat from the pre-Yitzchak. And the concept, therefore, that at least for a man, marriage is an absolute chiyuv, is something that says that, you know, one cannot just say, I want to be a bachelor. Interestingly enough, the woman might be able to have more of that option than a man, but a man is mechuyev to try to make that decision. Now, let me just mention a few reasons why the oversimplified idea of a shet, I will get my one that is destined for me, is not entirely true. Number one, we believe that Ein Mazal Yisrael, that things that have been predetermined or fixed in the stars, right, can be changed by tshuva, by tefillah, by ma'asim tovim. In fact, as Rabbi said, Avraham Avinu, based on his mazal, shouldn't have had children at all. And yet, HaKadosh Baruch Hu took him above the stars and said, you are above the Kohanim. So even if my mazel is to get a shidduch that's not so good, or even if my mazel perhaps is to be excluded from the shidduch entirely, nevertheless, tshuva and tefillah and ma'asim tovim can change that mazel. And I'll give you a raya that this is specifically true in the case of shidduchim. That is, look at last week's parsha when Laban switched Leah. Right, Yaakov was supposed to marry Rachel, and instead he marries Leah. Most of us read that story and say, oh, Laban fooled Yaakov. In reality, the reason Leah married Yaakov was not because of what Laban did. But in fact, in Leah's mazel, her Bashir was Esau, and Rachel's Bashir was Yaakov. Right, the older daughter goes to the older brother, the younger daughter goes to the younger daughter, But Leah's eyes were so weak from her crying and her praying and her tears that HaKadosh Baruch Hu changed her mazel, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave her the zchus to be together with Yaakov Avinu, and indeed to be the primary mother that was born at Kol Yisrael. Like six of the 12 shvatim came from Leah. So don't look at Leah marrying Yaakov as an example of Laban tricking Yaakov. Look at it as an example of the power of tefillah to change a negative mazel. So that's point number one, that to say, I'll get what's coming to me no matter what I do, that might be true, but you may not like what you're going to get. What I'm saying is, because how does a person know if their sherek is good or not good? It may not be so good. It may be an onish, it may be a mazel, etc. Through my tshuva, through my life and tefillah, I can change that mazel to something good. Point number two is a fascinating comment of the Meir. If you look at the Gemara in Seika, the Gemara in Seika quotes that statement 40 days before before Yetzirah of blood, Bas Pleni L'Pleni B'Sheret. But then the Gemara asks a contradiction. How can you say Hashem decrees it in stone? Ay, Yesh Lachish said, Ein Mizavkin Liadam, Elo Lefi Masa, that the type of marriage partner you get is a result of your good deeds, the Sphira, in other words, it's not set in stone. So the Gemara's answer is, Ha Bezibu Grishon, the first Shidduch is the Bashert, the one that's fixed in granite. The second, but if it's a Zibu Sheni, it depends on Lefi Masa. Different Rishonim discuss what if it's a Zivug Rishon for one person and a Zivug Sheni for another person, how does that work, etc. Now they tell that about a Zivug Sheni, about a fellow that went to a rabbi and he said he couldn't stand living with his wife anymore. So he had to give her a gift. So the rabbi gave her a gift. 5 minutes later he proposes to his wife, asks her to marry him. They get married 5 minutes later. So the rabbi said, I don't understand. He said, to divorce my He says, well, I really couldn't live with her as a Ziva Grisha, but the second marriage, second wife, she wasn't too bad. But okay, but be it as it may, there's a comment of the Me'iri that is relatively unknown, but very significant. The Me'iri says that Ziva Grisha does not mean first marriage versus second marriage. Rather, Ziva Grisha means a person who marries at a young age, and the Zivug Sheni is a person who gets married at an older age. He doesn't precisely define it. Meaning to say that, let's just pick, if you get married before 22, then we can talk about the Bashert or the destined one. Once a certain age passes, then the Bashert gets canceled, and then everything is based on your good deeds, your tefillah, your Masim Tovim. So the concept of the older bachelor or the older bachelorette that says, I don't have to worry because I'll get my Bashert. According to the Meiri, they're already operating under the Zivug Sheni concept. And if they're operating under the Zivug Sheni concept, then they better prepare themselves for the idea of marriage. Because there's no guarantee there. It depends on Masim Tovim, it depends on Shuva, it depends on Torah. So that is second point. So first point is, even if it's set in stone, ein mazel Yisrael. Second point is the concept of Zivug Sheni for older bachelors and women. Third point is the following. I mentioned that often people use the idea of Bashir as kind of their paralyzed. Because what if I don't get the right one? The truth of the matter is, even if it's MS, that there is an ideal person out there with whom one could achieve their greatest potential. If one does not get the person, that does not mean that their life is condemned to failure. Rather, there is any number of people, even if they're not the Bashirs, there is any number of people with whom one can make a significant life, a deserving life, a noble life, a good life. See, Bashir is not an all or nothing concept. Bashir might have been the ideal. But keep in mind that in most of our lives, we don't always get the ideal. You know, there's a saying in English that the best is the enemy of the better. That is, sometimes in our lives, we want something to be the absolute best. And if it's not the absolute best, we don't even take what we have and try to make something good out of it. One has to understand that in any position a person finds himself in, you can make something out of a difficult situation, you can make something good. Therefore, one has to understand, therefore, that my fear is to try to find the right person, to do the appropriate steps. And what I find and what I decide, I have an achrayus, I have a responsibility to turn it into something good. And whether it is my bashir or not my bashir is besides the point. There's no way I can ever know that. My achrayus is to make it good. So once again, one has to recognize that there may be a single one who is the ideal, but if someone is in less than the ideal, maybe try to still make it a very, very good thing. I should also add that it is possible to lose one's bashir by a failure to make reasonable efforts to get married properly, or by insisting on irrelevant or insignificant criteria. The five o'clock, I remember I mentioned a story about a woman who was dating a young man, and she liked the young man, she thought he was very special, but the one thing she couldn't stand is she was a very organized, masseter person. And she felt she could not live with a person who was not very well organized. So she wanted to see this person's dormitory room in the sheets. Now, you know, it's not so tedious for the young woman to ask the man, take me to your room, right? But anyway, somehow she knew, or her brother knew, a boy in the sheets, etc. So the boy, I don't know how this happened exactly, took her to a dorm room. And the dorm room was neat, everything was in order, the pens and the paper, everything was in the right place. And she says, oh, Baruch Hashem, I see that he's really someone like me. And she married him, got married. Now later she found out that the room that she was shown was not the room of the young man she got engaged with, because that room was a total mess. That room was a total korban, and had she seen it, she would have broken up the relationship immediately. But rather it was the room of his friend, who happened to be a very mysterious of the person. Shortly after she got married, when she found this out, she called up the boy that showed her his room and said, you know, I really want to thank you for what you did, because I know that you lied to me at the time, but if you would have shown me his room, I never would have married him. And now I'm so happy that I did marry him, because I see that what I thought was important was not so important. She says, I'm still picking up his clothes, and I'm still cleaning up after him, but in the overall scheme of things, it doesn't make that much of a difference. And the stipler used to say, people who are the stipler, they would say to the stipler, where is my Bashiris? And the stipler said, you met her 5 years ago, but you rejected him because of some minor or trivial thing. Now this works both ways too. I'm not saying I'm an example of women, but it certainly works the same way with men. So one should recognize that one can certainly lose their Bashiris by a failure to make reasonable efforts or by insisting on irrelevant criteria. What does one look for? Well, the truth of the matter is, a lot of the externals that one looks for are not really that important. What one is looking for is someone that shares a vision of the type of home that one wants to have in terms of religious commitments, in terms of caring about Klal Yisrael, in terms of respecting and being machshir Torah, in terms of chesed, in terms of avodas Hashem. Are the goals the same? Is there a common vision? And if there's a common vision, a there's a common thing, and if there's a willingness to share and give of yourself, then there is a foundation to build, even if the infatuation or the chemistry or the stars or the bells and the whistles are not necessarily present. The riot to that, Mephibosheth brings the riot. If you remember, when Yitzchak finally marries Rivka, so the pasuk says, he brings her, by Yiviyah Yitzchak Olal, he brings her into the tent of Sarah Imo, but the Kilo Reisha, she became his wife, the Yavah, and he loved her. In other words, her first points out that the emotion of love was the outgrowth of their marriage. The love didn't precede the marriage. What precedes the marriage? Because he brought her into the tent of Sarah. What does it mean he brought her into the tent of Sarah? Rashi explains that in the tent of Sarah Imenu, there were three miracles that existed at all times. There was a blessing in her bread. If you ate her bread, you were full. Her candle that she lit for Shabbos remained lit the entire week. There was a cloud of glory over her tent. When Sarah Imenu died, those three simanim left. Sarah brought those simanim into Abraham's life. When Rivka was, how old was Rivka? According to Chazal, Rivka was only 3 years old. But somehow, according to another Chazal, she was 14 years old. Either way, she was mighty young. When Rivka came into the tent, he saw that Rivka brought back all of the holiness that had left when Sarah died. He saw that she was a person who had that desire for ruchnius, that desire for kedusha, that goal to build a baris haman in Israel. And seeing that goal, he married her. And then, as a result of what they went through together, he loved her. So true love, if we're not talking about infatuation or sexual desire, is not the precursor to a marriage. True love is a consequence of growing and struggling together and experiencing things together. And that's why in any good marriage, the love is going to grow. When love is based on infatuation or desire or even physical attractiveness, that love is going to wane as time goes on. It's going to get smaller and smaller and smaller. But when the love is based on a common commitment, as you share life, that love is only going to grow. So the first points out that true love something that comes from marriage. It's not what you need before marriage. Before marriage, you need compatibility, you need the kind of feeling comfortable with each other, and you need a shared vision. And this really brings me, I think, to what is the greatest problem. And that is, how do you share a vision of life if you don't have a vision of life? That is, the real problem, I don't want to say this is a problem for singles, a lot of people get married with the same problem too, but the problem is, how many of us spend time and think about what is important in our lives? Why are we living? What type of homes do we want to have? I don't mean in terms of what type of furniture or things like that, but spiritually, what are our goals? Do we make realistic goals? Do we ask ourselves, where we want to be a year from now, or 5 years from now, or next month? Do we really assess what our lives are about? And the problem is, until we try to define for ourselves what our vision should be, how can we possibly communicate to someone else a notion of shared vision? And that is why the single most important tachana for getting married is to try to make oneself into the best type of person that they're capable of being. Instead of talking about how do I get my bashert, maybe the question is, how do I become my bashert? How do I become a person that is deserving of the tremendous gift that Hashem can give me by finding a soulmate with whom I can grow and become what I'm able to become? I want to mention another thing that I noticed this over the years with Jewish Observer. If you've had a Jewish Observer, they've had this feature intermittently over the years where people write public letters. A letter to my neighbor in Shul, right? He publishes that, I don't want to mention names, but my neighbor always talks very loudly. And it's a way of initiating a dialogue. A letter to my neighbor, etc. So I noticed, though, in recent years, I noticed two letters which disturbed me very much. One was a letter by an infertile woman, a woman who could not have children, in which she wrote about the pain that she faced when everybody's always talking about their children. And she talked about how painful it is, etc. And of course, some of the stories she mentioned were very horrible. They would sit down and they would be talking about how hard it is that all their kids, have all this homework all the time, etc. It's kind of rubbing it in. So one letter was about that. They're always talking about their kids, type of thing. And the other letter was a woman who was not yet married, and all of her friends in seminary and school were married, were getting engaged, and she said they're always talking about their husband. And there seemed to be a certain notion, and again, people are suffering, and one has to have rahmanis, and one should be very concerned. But there seems to be a notion of not rejoicing in the good fortune of other people. And Chazal teach us, Hamispalel al chaveiro, v'hu tzarich liyoso davar. Right. If I pray for you to give you brachos in life, and I need those same brachos, but I don't think about myself, I think about you. So Chazal said, I will be answered with what I need in the narrative of that, that I'm thinking about someone else. The raya is that Abraham prayed for Abimelech, that Abimelech and the Plishtim should have kids, and the next pasuk says, Abraham oled et Yitzchak. And this is the big issue. There's a person who doesn't have children, that's not the topic, but the person doesn't have a child. But to rejoice in the brachos that Hashem has given others. To be interested in other people's children. To be an aunt or an uncle. To be involved in their lives. To have a contribution in their education. That is a getter of this parallel chaveira in which you get joy in someone else's joy. Chazal tell us that is a tremendous sekula to be blessed. Look at it this way. It's a no-loss proposition. If you're blessed with your own, Baruch Hashem, if you're not blessed with your own, you have a connection to them. And that's something too. And far too often, people take their agony and their suffering as a way of begrudging the simcha and the joy that other people have, instead of rejoicing in the blessings that Hashem gives, and then finding blessings in your own life. And the same is true for Shidduch. The concept that because a person is not engaged as 22, 23, 24, 28, or 30, is they can't stand to be around people that are getting married. They can't stand going to a wedding. I would suggest, again, I understand it. I don't mean to condemn the person individually. But I would suggest that if they really want to get married, one of the ways they can start is to be the sameach and the good fortune of people that have those particular brachas. That's what Chazal says. So that's something to think about as well. So those letters are really upset me very much. The concept that this woman literally could not stand having anybody ever talk about their child in her presence. About this. She had to leave the table whenever her mother would say, gee, my vessel is sick today, whatever it is. And I would think that that's a little bit of a machala that one should try to very much work on. So these are kind of some basic ideas, the ability of changing our mazel, the meaning of zivug sheni, the ability to make a good life with someone even if they're not your basheret. It should also be the idea of you can lose your basheret by being too fussy, and the notion that one should rejoice in the simcha of others. I should also mention too that basheret does not mean there will not be a problem or an obstacle. Remember, people sometimes say, gee, if I'm having difficulties, if I have conflicts, if we have tensions, this couldn't be the right person. But you have to understand, it's exactly the opposite. Sometimes Hashem may have given me a certain person as a basheret, because it forces me to work out certain difficulties and be misak in my own needs. Because it may very well be that the very difficulty in the relationship is why it was basheret. And people make a mistake when they think that basheret means they don't have to work on my marriage. It's part of Hakadosh Baruch Hu's plan that I do so. And in this sense, I just want to share with you the idea that if one really Well, I remember my wife had told me that before we were married, which was only 20 years ago, she asked Revison in Milwaukee, the old Milwaukee Revison, this is Abraham Korsky's mother, Alana Shalom, who just in the last year, in her late 90s. She was the Bob Rev's sister. And she was already a little bit senile, so you weren't always sure, but she asked her a question, how do you get a good husband? So the rabbi said, by being a good wife. So the rabbi said, I don't understand. I don't have a husband yet. He says, you have to repeat it. You be a good wife. But again, the lesson is that you get good by being good. How do you be good? What do you need to be good? Well, certainly the general qualities of the Torah deity are very conducive to being a good marriage person as well. Just to mention it. Sensitivity to others. Right? Naisei b'yayochaveyo, bearing someone's yoke, having empathy, having rahmanis, having compassion. You know, they tell a story about Kavitz Chaim. Kavitz Chaim was once invited to someone's house for Shabbos. And when they came home from shul, the man noticed that the wife had forgotten to cover up the chalas before Jewish. So he started yelling at her. He was very embarrassed. Kavitz Chaim's here! Don't you know to cover up the chalas? So the Kavitz Chaim interrupts him in the middle of his tirade. Says, excuse me, Rabbit, maybe you could tell me why are the chalas covered up in Shabbos? And the man said, well, because we don't want to embarrass the wine, the bread rather. Normally we begin the meal with the bread, but tonight we begin with the wine. We don't want to embarrass the bread. He was a Lamed. He knew where the Medrash, the Rashi quotes, the Rashbam quotes in the Sefer Pesachim. The Chafetz Chaim thinks for a minute and says, I see. So you're so concerned not embarrassing the poor bread, that you can yell at your wife and be Mavaya Shurgara. Chavetz Chaim's story is a very important story because it makes a point. It makes a point that the idea of a Torah Yid is not simply to be preoccupied with the detail of halacha, although it certainly includes that. But if one covers up the challah and does so by humiliating another human being, he's missing the whole point of the mitzvah. The mitzvah is to teach us how sensitive we have to be, not to hurt the feelings, as it were, even of the inanimate, as a symbol for how sensitive we have to be to human being. Sensitivity to others. Number two, gratitude and appreciation for whatever life gives us. The Sfas Emes says a beautiful thing. Why are Jews called Yehudim? After all, Yehudim are Shevet Yehuda. Why are the rest of us called Yehudim? Zachta Sfas Emes. Leah calls her fourth child Yehudim. Why does she call her fourth child Yehudim? The Pasuk says, Hatam Odes Hashem. Because now I am grateful. For I have gotten more than I deserve. Why did she get more than she deserved? Because she knew Yaakov would have 12 boys. And she already had three. So the first three is coming to her because there are four wives. One she has, the fourth one, she's gotten more than she deserved. The Sfas Emes says, every Jew is called a Yehudi because every Jew must go through life with the belief that Hashem has given me more than I deserve. Not helping, yes, sir. Gratitude and appreciation for life. A person that has gratitude and appreciation for whatever life gives him is not going to get angry if supper is not exactly ready when he comes home. Because it's not healthy, yes, sir, Elkhil. A third, Nida, resilience, which is really related, resilience in the face of adversity and disappointment. If one is a Maimon, if one believes that what happens in their life is dictated by God, and what God does to them is Gamzu L'Tova, they're not going to be broken by the difficulties and disappointments that invariably crop up in life. They'll be able to roll with the punches. They'll be able to fall and then pull themselves up again. They will be able to protect themselves against despair and depression and despondency because they have a sense of an ultimate purpose and meaning in what happens to them, even if they don't know what that purpose is. emphasize controlling and managing anger. Anger is considered to be a beast that is wicked. Chazal describe it as an animal. And what do we say? Kalakales, anyone that is angry is treated like an idol worshiper. We are told that it's forbidden for a man in particular to create an atmosphere of fear, namely a seva in his home. So the truth of the matter is, if you just look at Chazal, but only you have to learn what's your spark. Take the famous explicit Mamore Chazal. Sensitivity to others, gratitude and appreciation, resilience, controlling and managing anger. You know, instead of, I don't want to disparage, you know, the kind of miraculous things. You know, people talk about segulos. You know, you go to a certain kever and you pray, or you wear a certain string, or you get some oil. There's some before the recent municipal election. The Shas party was selling some oil that the Makobo had blessed, used the olive oil. And then, of course, the person in Israel, politics is very, very strong, because another religious party came out with an advertisement. We have heard that some people have been food poisoned by using this thing to do it. So they're different things. But I'm not telling anyone not to do these things. But I'm pretty sure that if one would invest their energies and their focus in these mitzvot, sensitivity to others, gratitude, resilience, controlling anger, and praying for other people's gratitude, resilience, controlling anger, and praying for other people's joy. I bet you, just my bet, that it would count a lot more than whatever brand of olive oil that you use. The problem is, it's much easier to buy the olive oil than to do these things. But these are the things which can give a person their bashert and get a real good. So I just want to end with one thing, and that is, a word from the Torah, I just finished the book. It says that in the Pasuk, Lo tov kayos ha'adam levada. It is not good for man to be alone. Let me make a helpmate, connect them. And the Torah asks the Kasha, this isn't Gan Eden. Why isn't it good for man to be alone? He has whatever he wants in the Garden of Eden. And the Torah's answer is, it's not good because man in the Garden of Eden can take whatever he wants to take. But he doesn't have anyone to whom to give. And marriage was created to give us the ability to become godly and spiritual by becoming givers rather than takers. And therefore, what we look for in a marriage is the opportunity to be able to give of ourselves to another. And in that way, we become transformed. And in that way, we become the person that is deserving of the brachos that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us. So again, I hope that, you know, I hope I can live up to this, all of us should be so good to really not just find out our shares, but to make our shares.
Thank you just for a second. Hirsch and Kumish said the Talmud by Yosef Adam Levada is not to state that it's not good for men to be alone, but God said the Talmud is not good. Because I used to have a lot of the men alone. Let me tell you a little story. I was in Miami Beach with our RSA convention the year with the elected president. Our convention came in the state of Shabbos. They noticed with the Dominicans that the Friday night at the table is bare for Kiddush, only Kiddush. Because the most of the parts matter of the Kaddish. So in the lost house, when they once for Shabbos, the table is not set. Until after Kiddush, then even the salt shakers, even the silverware, that's the minimum risk. You came to the convention on the table, the davening, so the table was set with silverware, plates. And I went over to the waiter quickly and said, no, that's the HGC, you've got to clear the table. And the host said to me, wouldn't you tell him I heard something? I said, well, no. No, 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 says the head is the Jewish waiters. The husband, the waiter, you want me to give? No, 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 it's too much work for the waiters. And then there was a story that Rasul Salanta came to his grandfather's house and died. Then you have to wash the pillars and die twice, three times, back and forth. And brought water to the table, Rasul Salanta, the Jewish maid. And the Babos yelled at the girl, Ishkila Glasta, let the water be some more water. Rasul said, one and the rain's not water. What's the Bashema, the Yiddish and Tachta, to embarrass the Jewish girl, they're much bigger than they. And this is exactly what you pointed out. We did not use coming to us. We want to thank you very, very much, Rabbi. I know it's been a tremendous sacrifice you came. For some strange reason, the heat is moving. It's not what it's supposed to be. But we're delighted. Great privilege to have you now. It really is. I just marvel at the range of your knowledge. And you managed to keep all those on a sheet of paper. Again, I want to thank the Rabbi and all of you for coming.
That non-Jews could also change tefillah. I think change their mazel. But I think the answer is different. With Ninveh, tefillah did not change their mazel. Tefillah and Shuva changed the punishment that resulted from their voluntary behavior. Meaning, if a goy does something bad, and that's why Hashem decrees, a goy also has a form of tshuva. But those things that are kind of in granite under the constellations, a goy does not have the power to change that. So a goy's tefillah can only go on new gezeros that Hashem makes, as opposed to a Jew, you can go back and change the original masa.